Morning, Counsel.
Good morning. My name is Judith Sadler, and I represent the petitioner Bally's Atlantic City. The key issue in this case is whether Bally's violated the National Labor Relations Act by discharging Jose Justiniano for misusing his Family Medical Leave Act time. Now, the administrative law judge found that Mr. Justiniano would have been discharged regardless of his involvement in union activity, and that the issue was whether Mr. Justiniano left the union rally prior to the beginning of his FMLA leave time. It is important in this case that the administrative law judge credited without doubt the Bally's witnesses as being truthful and detailed, specific, and providing consistent testimony that established that Mr. Justiniano left the union rally after the time that he was supposed to be at home caring for his daughter. On the other hand, they determined that Mr. Justiniano was not credible, that he gave inconsistent testimony, contradictory testimony about the time he left, and that his witnesses were contrived. Bally's established that it had a consistent policy and practice of discharging any employee who misused leave for any reason. And neither the board nor the UAW presented a single instance over the course of years in which there was a deviation from this policy. Not one instance.
What was the closest case you had to show consistency? The closest instance?
Okay. In terms of time, there was an individual who was discharged when she used 45 minutes of time. The board's position is,
what were the facts of that case?
In that case, she misused the time to cover, she was coming in from another job.
Yeah, and so the most you've got here is that he took off a number of hours, and he might have, if his account is believed, that he might have been 20 minutes later starting caring for the child because he...
Actually, Your Honor...
He didn't need to care for the child before that? The board seems to be correct. The Bally seems to be saying he should have come in and worked 20 minutes and then gone over to look after the child.
No, sir. That is actually what they would like to say, because they would like to portray this as some unreasonable policy. But the fact...
They seem to be having a pretty good time of it.
Well, I understand that, you know, it's a sympathetic situation because the reason that people take these leaves are sympathetic reasons. Mm-hmm. However, Mr. Justiniano had other options. For example, he could have left the union rally when he was supposed to leave the union rally and been at home caring for his child.
The need to care for his child didn't arise until Mama brought the child over there, right?
And
was 20 minutes into the time of his...
You know, the thing about that, Judge, is that Bally's has to have a consistent policy where it says that if you use leave, if you take leave, you take 8 hours of leave, you are presumed to use that leave for the purpose for which it's intended. Mm-hmm. And if you do not use that leave for that purpose, then you're going to be discharged. Because
does it say anywhere that... I understand the part about having a policy about misusing leave, but I haven't seen anywhere where it says, and you will be fired. That's really the issue here.
Okay. With regard to that, there are several points that are relevant to that.
First, on the fact point.
Okay. There is
either written or oral or announced to the employees when they first come or anything like that. It wasn't the leave issue. It's make a false statement to the employer, right? That's really the ground on which he was fired, right?
Work rule number 3 specifically requires employees to be honest and forthcoming in all cases.
Has Bally's ever told the employees either in writing or orally that if you lie about anything, $1 worth, $2 worth, 1 minute worth, 2 minutes worth, you will be fired immediately? Have they ever said that?
In terms of those specific words, I can't represent that.
Well, the word is discharge.
Represent is that when they come, they are given a copy of those work rules. Those work rules specifically say 2 things, and this was entered into evidence by the general counsel. They say you must be honest and forthcoming in all communications, which Mr. Justiniano was not, because he affirmatively filled out paperwork saying he had used that leave time when in fact he had not. And it also requires in Work Rule 16 that you comply with all state, federal, local regulations and all commonly known policies. Obviously, that didn't happen. Those work rules also say that if you violate the work rules, you are subject to being terminated. And it is, I believe...
It doesn't say you will be terminated. That's really the question. It says are subject to. Is your, leaving aside the leave issue.
Yes.
And Bally's fires people, fires every employee. As a matter of fact, is there evidence in the record that Bally's fires employees for any misstatement to management about anything?
About anything? No, that issue was not raised. Now
that is raised because that's the rule you said is being violated.
Well, and with regard to that rule, the board tries to distinguish it in two instances in which it was not dealing with the misuse of leave time. There were two women who were involved in an investigation. They made a misrepresentation, and Bally's did in that situation because of the specific circumstances in which they were in. It was determined they were in fear of their physical safety, which had generated the reason for their misrepresentation. Bally's did not terminate them. But with regard to the misuse of leave time, there is not one instance in which Bally's has deviated. And in fact, there are two other instances in the policies that are in the examples that were provided in which that are very similar to Mr. Justiniano, not just in terms of time. Ms. Ching initially used time for the purpose of caring for her father. She then decided to just continue to use the leave time after he had passed away. They investigated, they terminated her. Mr. Lambrusciano...
What did she do with the leave time after that?
Specifically, she did not return to work. I can't tell you specifically what she was doing, but she was ostensibly at home caring for her father. It was low-termed.
There was the whole chunk of leave time that she was misusing, right?
No, sir. She used the first part for caring for her father, which was a permissible use. She then, after he passed away and had no reason for it, continued to misuse.
On a given day thereafter, it was the whole chunk of leave time,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Okay.
And then with
respect... And this case, again, taking the evidence as we must, you're talking about starting looking after the child, what, 20 minutes, 30 minutes into the shift instead of at the beginning of the shift? Am I not right in that?
He started caring for the child at 12:30.
Yes,
sir.
And
that's
when did
correct.
The shift start?
At 11:55.
11:55, okay, so it's 35 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Do you not see any difference between that and somebody just flat out lying about what they're doing with the leave time?
I don't see a difference, and the reason I don't...
Okay.
I don't.
Okay.
And the reason I don't, Judge, is because you have to have a policy.
No, you don't.
If we...
No, you don't. You don't have to have a bright line policy that's that absolute on anything. Employers use judgment all the time. And they're a lot more credible when they're explaining judgment than they are when they're claiming we have to have a bright line policy.
If they did not have in this instance, there is evidence in the record that they have a business justification for that, and that is undisputed that they have, for example, the Exhibit 15 is a 73-page document in which employees have used for just 1 year FMLA time. There is undisputed evidence that the employer has to compensate and overstaff for this. So there's a legitimate business justification, and their policy is consistent with the Family Medical Leave Act, which says leave is to be used for the purpose for which it was intended. If we sit in a situation where we say, okay, well, we're going to say it's okay for 30 minutes. Well, then what about the next person for 40 minutes?
So if you want to have that rule, you can announce to the employees in advance, you violate any rule in any respect and you will be fired. Now, I assume the reason you don't have a rule like that is it'd be hard to get employees under those circumstances, but maybe not. But if you had a flat rule and actually enforced it in every circumstance, then it would be hard to say that the reason somebody was fired was anything other than the rule. But the problem is you don't have that rule. You have a rule that says don't lie. You have a rule that says don't misuse leave. But you don't have, and you say you may be, you're subject to discipline, to discharge. It doesn't say you will be disciplined. That just causes an evidentiary problem for you. We're not saying that you can't have that rule. The problem is the evidence. And in this case, as the board points out, there's a lot of evidence of anti-union animus against this guy. And when you have that kind of evidence, then the burden is on you under right line, and you have a harder burden than you would have in another circumstance.
And in this case, Judge Garland, the administrative law judge looked at and heard the witnesses and determined that Bally's witnesses and the reasons that they gave were credible witnesses.
But our review on credibility and on fact-finding is of the board, not of the ALJ, right?
But Judge Santel, if the board is going to reverse the administrative law judge based on credibility, then they have to say
that's not the law, is it?
If
you're about to tell me something that isn't the law, I think.
No, sir. I'm not trying to tell you what isn't the law. What I'm saying is that the board adopted those credibility determinations because the clear preponderance of the evidence was that there was no reason to reverse those. And for the board to now say it's a pretext, we don't agree with the factual representations, is inconsistent with the fact that they adopted the credibility decisions. So, you know, once they make that decision and they accept those credibility decisions, then they're stuck with those credibility decisions, which are the same reason that the administrative law judge found that Bally's would...
As is our habit, we've talked you past your allotted time. You have questions?
Yes, sir.
Is there any reason that an employee must request leave of a full shift, or can they request any amount?
No, Mr. Justiniano had the option of, and any employee has the option of requesting the specific amount of leave. In this instance, with the record reflects us that he called in that morning and requested 8 hours. Then, 6 days later, when he completed the paperwork, knowing that he had not used the full 8 hours of time, he completed the paperwork and again requested the full 8 hours of the time. So at that point, he has now affirmatively requested it on two separate occasions, after which he clearly knows he did not need the full 8 hours.
Is this paid leave?
He actually requested that it would be paid, Judge, and under some instances, there is a policy in which Bally's does pay leave. And he requested it on his form. He checked it and initialed that it was to be paid.
Is leaves under the Act, under the Family Leave Act, is paid?
No, sir. I believe that Bally's has a certain policy of allowing employees to use personal time concurrently with family medical leave, and thus, if he had had that personal time, he would have been eligible to be paid at that point. If,
with the Chief Judge's indulgence, I just have one more question.
Take your time. I have often, perhaps to the boredom of my colleagues, quoted the late Judge Butler Robinson, who said, "These lights only control the bar. Only God can control this bench." So you may proceed.
I appreciate it.
Absent divine intervention.
So, oh my God. So the work rule that is said to be violated is 3 and 16, I thought, or which one is the one?
The one that was actually written down was work rule 3, that he was not honest and forthcoming in his communications.
Right. So if you just help me with this one thing. That
sure.
If you look at JA 370, which actually has the rules on it. So right above the work rules, it says, although the violations noted below may result in immediate separation of employment or immediate final written warning upon first offense, less severe offenses are viewed cumulatively and will normally be handled on a four-step basis of progressive discipline.
Yes, sir.
And I see a lot of these cases, I see that as typical. Why does that not apply here?
In this case, Bally's has consistently, since the inception of the Family Medical Leave Act, and that's, in fact, the examples are running from 2003 to 2007, not made a distinction, because then you get into a situation of weighing each individual case. Well, was this a valid reason? Was that a valid reason?
So isn't that rule of practice that you're saying is actually inconsistent with the written rule?
I don't think in this instance it is inconsistent, because Bally's reserves the right to exercise its option and to terminate. And the other situation that I think is important
Just hold for one second. It says, less severe offenses are viewed cumulatively and will normally be handled on a four-step basis of progressive discipline. If 20 minutes of false leave time is not a less severe offense, what is a less severe offense?
I would say if someone is tardy to work, if someone perhaps doesn't come to work within the proper attire, if someone smokes on the premises and they're not allowed to smoke on the premises, or perhaps if
someone... You can see the problem of having a rule that suggests to the employees that you're, and to the board, that you're going to have progressive discipline, and then having an unwritten rule not announced to the employees, but which you only can establish by looking at, you know, 8 anecdotes.
With respect, Judge Garland, Mr. Giustiniano never testified that he did not understand that he had to use this leave for the specific purpose for which it was intended. And there was no evidence introduced it at all.
And it still is a different... I think you have a... If the board had come up the other way, you would have a good, you know, very good case. The problem is we have a deferential standard of review. But in this case, the issue again is not whether he understood that he was violating the rule, or even whether he was violating the rule. The question is whether his firing was motivated by his union association, not some discipline, but firing.
And in that regard, you have to look at the fact that to make that determination, the board has to have substantial evidence of pretext, and they don't have it. The administrative law judge said there is nothing that supports that he would not have been terminated regardless of
the accident. They have substantial evidence of pretext. That's how they got to the second step of Rightline. The substantial evidence is that 3 times he was wrongly, and so wrongly that you don't even defend it, told that he couldn't talk about the union on the premises.
You know, we would be in a very difficult situation if I was standing here trying to argue with you that that wasn't a valid credibility decision, whereas this was a valid credibility decision. And those were instances in which, no, that's correct. We did not challenge the fact that he was told he shouldn't talk about the union. But if you look at the record, the testimony with regard to Mr. Tartaglio and Mr. May, the decision makers, was that they did not have an issue with Mr. Giustiniano and they considered him an adequate employee. In fact, when he walked in and said, yes, I left, you know, I was there, I left the union rally at 12:20, it was at that point they said, then we have a problem.
All right, I'm fine. Thank you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, counsel. We did talk you out of time. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal if necessary.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the respondent. Morning, counsel.
Morning. May it please the court. My name is Zachary Hennigy. I'm here on behalf of the National Labor Relations Board. Your Honors, the issue I think is a little narrower than earlier described. The question is whether the board was correct in finding whether the employer would have fired Giustiniano absent union activity. And that's primarily based on the activity that was directed at Giustiniano that is not contested. The fact that Giustiniano was an avid union advocate, a key player for the UAW in the casino union organizing drive. He was in a promotional video for the union. He attended rallies. He talked to people. He signed people up. He was a key figure in the union's campaign. And the employer, in response, directly interfered and coerced Giustiniano in his union activity. Manager Hitchy told Giustiniano that he couldn't talk about the union on the casino floor where other social conversations were permitted. After disagreeing with manager Grau about a break time issue, he told the manager that was why the employees needed a union. Subsequently, 3 different managers came up to him and said, you cannot talk about the union on the casino floor. One of them said, you can't talk about the union whatsoever. Manager Catala attempted to solicit grievances from Giustiniano and other employees in an attempt to dissuade them from joining the union. In response, Giustiniano said, it's too late, the damage is done. They wanted a union. And what happened in response? Giustiniano attended a rally, and that triggered his termination, that event. Before all those examples of the managers talking to him, soliciting grievances, those are uncontested facts in this case. Now, earlier I heard a little conversation about the credibility determinations. The credibility determination the ALJ made in the earlier case was whether Giustiniano showed up at work at 12:20, 12:15, and the board credited the ALJ's determination that the managers were right and that he came in at 12:20. The things that the board disagreed with was that there was not a zero tolerance policy, that the examples that the employer showed were egregious and were remotely different than what happened in Justiniano's case. As far as the zero tolerance policy goes, this isn't a written policy, and the board's not saying that the employer has to have a written policy, but they do need to in some way communicate with the employees to give them some heads up that the standard is X, so that they should know not to do that and that there are consequences if they cross the line. What's the rule? The company points to rule number 3. It's couched between being courteous on the job site and being in a prohibition against being violent in the workplace. And as noted, there's a varying levels of greed where you get a verbal warning up to discipline, up to discharge. But there's no indication of any FMLA, what happens when you take FMLA. The FMLA provisions of the handbook in Exhibit 22 submitted by the GC, and this is in the record at 376, doesn't say how you'll be discharged, doesn't describe the consequences of any action if you...
Why is that relevant to an 883 case? If the employer treats everybody the same way, where's the 883? Is it in failing to put people on notice? As long as everyone's treated the same way, I don't get it.
The 883 is in the fact that the general counsel in the earlier case made its case that the employer knew about the union activity, Justiniano. The employer had union animus. That's demonstrated by the 881 violations. And they directed this at Justiniano. The board met its burden
If it turns out that Justiniano is, in fact, treated like anyone else that's similarly situated.
Correct.
Is there still an 883?
There might be.
The word discrimination appears in 883, doesn't it?
Correct, yes, it does.
So what's the discrimination if he's treated like anyone else?
If, maybe I'll take that back. If he's treated exactly like everybody else, and in all other things being equal, there is no discrimination.
Right, so no one had any notice. He wasn't any worse off than anyone else in that respect, an explicit policy. Everyone had some notice that the colleagues were being fired if they lied, or perhaps they didn't, but anyway, they're all treated alike. Now, the board says, well, not really, they're not all treated alike. That's the crux of the case.
Yes.
And I can't figure out what the distinction is that's drawn in this sentence. It's at 4 in the record, in the JA, and 4 of the opinion of the board. The carryover paragraph on the top of the page, the last sentence is, none of the prior cases is even remotely similar to that of Justiniano, who used his requested leave for a proper purpose after leaving a union rally that extended 20 minutes into a shift in order to meet his daughter at the time when she needed care. Now, it's true that none of the other cases involve 20 minutes, a union rally, a daughter who needed care, or any of these other facts, but I don't see what the significance is if anyone who requested leave for more and used leave for more than the asserted purpose was subject to discharge, was discharged.
Well, the difference is that Justiniano cared for his daughter on a particular day. He didn't lie about the reason that he needed to use FMLA leave on a particular day. In each and every one of the other examples, an employee requested leave on a particular day for a family medical leave purpose, and they didn't use it for that purpose. In some instances, they worked in another casino.
So maybe the key sentence is the next one, or actually two later. Justiniano did not intentionally and fraudulently request family leave for a purpose not covered by the act.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes.
But what do we know about others who used some of the leave for a purpose not covered by the act? The person who was covering for his supposedly ill wife when she was away and did shopping, so he would cover the bread and breakfast duties, sounds like exactly the same thing. He used some of his leave for a purpose not covered by the act.
On any particular day, in that instance, I think his name was Lambrusciano.
Yeah.
They had an investigator go, stayed at the inn. Investigator says, and this is at 269 in the record, we utilized a private investigator who actually stayed at the inn for a couple of days, and based on his investigation, it was determined that Mr. Lambrusciano was not taking care of his wife, but in reality was operating the business. He was fired later on the page. He was fired because he was not using FMLA reasons as he had indicated and as he needed. The difference is that he did use, requested a long period of time and on any particular day.
The Tartagliano testimony is that that he covered for his wife when she went out shopping, right?
That's part of the testimony, and they have a private investigator. He also testifies that the private investigator found that there was time when he didn't use the for caring for his wife. And he says, and that's what the investigator says, there are periods of time on any particular day, unlike in Justiano's case, where the leave was used to run another business.
It was used to go to a union rally. I'm still looking for the distinction. Not all of the leave was used for the purpose requested.
In the bed and breakfast case, was any of it used
for the purpose requested on a given day?
I'm sorry?
Was any of it in the bed and breakfast case used for the purpose represented?
Based on my reading of this text, the investigator found that he did not use it on the days that he was staying at the inn.
Thank you.
And, I guess there's a little glitch in the testimony then, because I've got a piece of it. I don't have the full text of it in front of me, but there was a piece where he clearly says that he was covering when his wife went out shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And the clear implication is that when she was there, she was handling the bed and breakfast.
And at times, and on particular days, maybe they did share those.
But there's nothing in there that said he was looking after her while she was sick, right?
Correct.
On that given day. So
why is it a given day that matters?
I think that the distinction is because there's the difference. There's the discrimination. And what happens is Tartagliano, when he's talking about Justiniano and being at the rally, he later talks about how 10 minutes is unacceptable, 5 minutes is unacceptable, 1 minute is unacceptable. And he also talks about, you know, they didn't tell all the employees every time somebody was fired for misuse of FMLA leave. I'm wondering if any employee at Bally's would expect that if they didn't use 1 minute of their FMLA leave for the intended purpose, 1 minute out of 8 hours, that they would automatically.
What you may not have, though, is a case showing discrimination in this sense. I'm not as troubled as my colleague apparently is about the difference between somebody who lies about how they're using the day of FMLA and somebody who uses nearly the whole day for proper purposes. But do you have a case where somebody used part of their time properly and arguably didn't use all of it properly where there was not a firing? What's the nearest case you have to these facts where there is a different treatment?
Where there's a different treatment.
Yeah, where somebody either did not discipline or discipline in a lesser manner for misuse or misstatement concerning FMLA.
Of some type of leave in FMLA, there isn't a case.
Every time they found any departure, they fired the person. It's as simple as that, right? And this is every one of these cases is a little different from the others.
That's true.
Unsurprising.
That's true.
But the one thing they have in common is there was any misuse, 45 minutes in another case, 20 minutes here, of the leave time, the person was fired.
The difference between 45 minutes and the 20 minutes that Justiniano used was the entire time that person requested on that day.
Why can't they have a policy of firing anybody who misuses any time, as they claim to have?
The company can have a policy that says that.
And they seem to have it because they fire anybody who misuses any time.
They don't tell the employees that.
Employees and then keep it from the union adherents. They didn't tell anybody. They just did it.
They didn't tell anybody.
And they're entitled to have a consistent, non-discriminatory policy.
But they're not administering the policy consistently.
That's what we're asking.
Where is the case where
they administered it inconsistently? It doesn't establish an inconsistency to have a more serious violation with the same punishment. What would establish an inconsistency would be to have a similar violation with a lesser penalty.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right. And do you have an instance in which there was a similar violation with a lesser penalty?
The board wasn't able to put on that evidence. The company didn't put on
evidence. The answer would be no, you don't have any such case.
Correct.
This is the first case that's come along where there are these particular facts, but there's nothing that undermines the claim of consistency here.
if you don't draw those distinctions.
Well, the distinction, again, is not in the opinion.
The distinction, the board says that if, in all the other cases, the employees asked for leave and they fraudulently used it.
Mm-hmm.
In Justiniano's case, the day he asked for leave, he cared for his daughter. He went, the daughter's mother called him the night before and said, I'm going to need you from 12 to 8.
That doesn't give you the kind of inconsistency you need in of itself. The fact that more severe violations were treated the same way is not inconsistent with this. For inconsistency, wouldn't you need a similar or lesser offense that was treated in a different way than this? So some kind of offense was treated in a different way than this to make out an inconsistency.
That's fair.
And there's nothing about this being day by day.
Justino was terminated for violating work rule number 3, which isn't being honest and forthright. And there were cases that...
Yes, but the board didn't make its decision based on that. They could have. They really could have. It would have been a lot simpler.
But your argument, the problem about consistency is it's actually their burden, not yours.
Correct.
Right? And... if you go through all these various anecdotes, even if one of them, the one with the bed and breakfast, holds, most of them, at least, are ones where it's pretty clear that the person is defrauding the casino. They are going out and working in another casino and trying to get paid by this casino.
Right.
So you have a very strong set of evidence that the employer has union animus. You have them firing somebody basically minutes after seeing them at a union rally. They respond, we have a consistent policy. And the only proof of a consistent policy is maybe one case, maybe two, that are not distinguishable. And the board's conclusion here is that the bottom line of the board, as far as I can say, is not that they didn't have a consistent policy or that they did, but that they didn't meet their burden and that they have a stronger burden given the evidence.
Correct, Your Honor. And the board cites the Agramo case, and it cites Eddie Leone chocolates, and in those cases, it's clear that a wrong existed. If the employer wants to say that these 20 minutes being used is a wrong, that's fine. But that reason alone wasn't the reason that they terminated Justiniano in this case, and they didn't show that they would have terminated him absent his union activity.
In the same long paragraph on 4, the board says that its conclusion is supported by Tartaglio's testimony that Justiniano would not have been subject to discipline if he had told them that he left the rally at any time before 12 noon, even though Tartaglio knew that Justiniano did not need to care for his daughter until 30 minutes later. Now, I think that's an erroneous reading of the record, and I don't know if you disagree, but assume that it's an erroneous reading of the record. That's not what Tartaglio said. Is there any way to avoid a remand under Chenery for the board to revisit this without reliance on that or misreading?
Yes, Your Honor. Even if you accept that as a miscorrect reading, that if you move up earlier in the paragraph, you see that Man Tartaglio or Tartaglio told Justiniano that, or said that they did not tell Justiniano that he should have come in for work for 15 minutes and then gone home to care for his daughter. They rely on that, and is in further support of that, not solely in support of that. The decision doesn't rest on Tartaglio's testimony about saying that if he left the rally any time before noon, he would have been okay. But if you look at the testimony of Tartagliano on 245, 246, all of his questions relate to when did you leave the rally, you were at the rally. He never asked Justiniano, when did you start caring for your daughter? He never asked Justiniano, when did you stop caring for your daughter? He never asked him at all whether he cared for his daughter. His concern wasn't whether or not Justiniano actually used leave for the intended purpose, the requested purpose. He was concerned with if he left the rally. And if he left the rally at 11:59, which apparently would have been okay under Tartaglio's framework, did he really care whether he got to see his daughter and care for her? Whether it was at 12:30, if he left the rally at 11:59, how was he supposed to start caring for his daughter and that would have been acceptable? His concern was with the rally.
What he said was what
rally.
He does on his own time is none of my concern. Family leave time is not his own time.
He did say that. But he wasn't concerned with when he started caring for his daughter.
That was the point he was making, and the board just boots it. as to the your former observation, they didn't say you should have come in for 15 minutes.
Correct, Your Honor.
They didn't say a lot of things. He registered for leave starting at 12. He had an obligation starting at a later time, 12:30 or 12:20. And if he had registered for 12:30 and then said, but do you really want me to come in for 30 minutes or 15 minutes, they might well have said no, but he didn't tell them the truth.
Or he possibly could have taken 30 minutes of of regular leave time and then gone on the family and medical leave.
And not having told them the truth, they had no occasion to ask them.
And these are all fair points, Your Honor, and Your Honors, and I believe that if you look at the sheet that he fills out when he comes back into work, he had taken leave 40 other times, and he had accrued a certain amount of leave time to, you know, take vacation or
sick
leave.
What's the JA number on that?
This is General Counsel 14. It's 365.
Go ahead.
It's a general employee request for intermittent leave. And he says that he took 8 hours. It describes, you know, please pay me. It doesn't really get into specifics of FMLA leave. Justiniano was called by the daughter's mother the night before and asked, will you be available from 12 to 8 o'clock tomorrow? And Justiniano said, no problem. He went through the proper procedures. He called first thing in the morning, 6 o'clock, left a message with the scheduling office. He called back to confirm that it was okay. And he came into the office. He used a similar form. He'd done this some 40-odd times before without worry. Whether or not he used 1 or 2 minutes in another time frame, you know, exactly not caring for his daughter, that didn't come out in the transcript. But this form that he fills out doesn't say that, you know, how you can split up the hours. Could I split it up with just personal leave and have the rest of it FMLA leave? There's no spot for that. And to fault Justiniano for trying to tweak that on the back end, I don't think that's was expected.
Thank
or shown
you,
to
counsel.
Be expected.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, I think we have taken you well beyond your allotted time. So thank you, and we'll hear from the petitioner in rebuttal. I'll give her back 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
The crux of this case is whether or not Bally's was consistent. They were consistent. It may be a strictly enforced rule. We deal with situations in which people are requesting personal leave, and those always pull at people's heartstrings. But the fact is that Bally's was consistent. It did not discriminate against Mr. Justiniano, and that is the heart of the 8A3 violation. With regard to the testimony that Judge Ginsburg was referring to, I believe it's on 260 with respect to the bed and breakfast. And in that case, the testimony is that Mr. Lombrusciano did care for his wife some of the time, just as Mr. Justiniano used.
I understand that you can put the whole block together, but generally speaking, people are talking about leave on a given day, aren't they? I mean,
well, 45 minutes on a given day.
I'm sorry, Judge. I'm not following.
Did he use any time to look after his wife on the days in question, or was he covering her while she went shopping and not doing anything?
The testimony is that he said she needed constant care. Yeah. She did not need constant care, so he did, and he cared for her some of the time, and some of the time he didn't.
He cared for her on some days and not on other days.
That is correct, yes, sir.
Right.
Or at some parts of those days.
That's factually parallel to a case in which somebody is looking after a sick child for 7.5 hours of a shift rather than.
Well, actually, I do think it's parallel, and the reason is because for two reasons. One, it is an example in which we've consistently enforced the policy, and that is the heart of the issue. And two, Mr. Justiniano admitted at the hearing that he didn't actually use the whole 8 hours or 7.5 hours. He admitted at the hearing, of course, that he used the back end of the time. He didn't use that time either. And then he turned around and made the request 6 days later.
How much time at the back end?
2 hours.
Two hours.
And then And then when he made the request, he was not terminated, and the meeting was not held until April 9th, which was after he had completed the forms requesting the FMLA leave on April 6th, and then he was terminated on April 12th. So there was some period of time in there when he had affirmatively made a representation to Bally's that he'd used the time for the purpose of.
I have a question about this consistent policy and the way in which we have to defer to the board given its decision. So if we accept, as we have to, that Bally's committed unfair labor practices against this specific individual with respect to the union, and if we also accept as a fact that they saw him at a union rally and then 3 days later he was fired, and that, you have to confess, creates a certain inference at least. And if your response to that is, I have one or two examples. Assume for the moment you can't win the other four or five, that you've got the bed and breakfast. I've got one other or two other examples in which somebody has been fired for making a false statement. Is that enough to overcome? I mean, yes, it's consistent in the sense that there are now three examples or two examples in Bally's history of somebody being fired. But is that enough to overcome the other evidence? And more important, is it enough for us to say that the board is unreasonable in concluding that it's not enough to overcome?
Yes.
That's our standard. And yes, why is that? Why is that?
Let me explain. First of all, I'm not willing, with all due respect, I don't believe that we just have those two or three examples, because we have consistent policies in every instance.
How many examples do you need?
We presented nine.
How many examples? And you think, how many of those do you need? Let me put it another. First, I want to be sure I understand our standard of review is correct. The question we have to ask is whether the board was arbitrary and capricious in concluding that Bally's had not met its burden to show that he was fired for a discriminatory reason, right? That's the burden.
The board doesn't present any evidence, none. They don't identify one instance in which there was a deviation from the policy, not one.
You only had one instance. Forget about it. And that's all there was. I'm accepting that there's only been one other situation in history where anybody has ever lied about their leave, and you fired him. Would that be enough for us to say that the board was unreasonable in concluding that one example doesn't establish a consistent policy strong enough to overcome the evidence of animus?
Yes, I think it would be, and I think it would be for two reasons. One, if you only have one other instance and you treat it consistently, you're being consistent. I mean, the facts are, you know, whatever the facts are that you happen to be dealing with. Maybe you are fortunate as an employer to not have a lot of issues. But the second reason is, when you look at the testimony, the entirety of the testimony, there's not one sentence in which any witness ever said there was a deviation from this policy. And Mr. Tartaglia and Mr. May, at the risk of losing their licenses if they commit perjury, testified about this, and the administrative law judge upheld that decision and justification.
This was the first time anybody had ever lied about leave. No one had ever lied before, and so, of course, no one had ever been fired before. And you fired him saying, we have a consistent policy, yours just happens to be the first. Would that be okay? Would it be unreasonable for the board to conclude that you had, what was really going on here was targeting him?
Well,
if it was a first,
assuming hypothetically that we're not dealing with that, but assuming hypothetically, yes, I think it would be reasonable. It would still be a reasonable policy, because the FMLA specifically provides that employers may have a strictly enforced policy. There's case law that permits that. For example, the city of Philadelphia case that
and
we
I
cite.
Don't think the board is disagreeing that you can have that policy.
The
question is whether they think there's sufficient evidence.
And, you know, Judge Garland, you look at that footnote. Look at footnote 9 in their decision. And their footnote 9, they even acknowledge that they don't have evidence. They say it is a suggestion, that it is an inference, that they believe that that Bally's would have treated them differently. And, you know, and they want to make a distinction. They say, well, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't fraudulent. That's not the heart of the policy. The heart of the policy is consistent application of enforcement of the consequences when someone misuses the leave. And that is what Bally's did. And there's, in this case, there's, yes, sir.
Look at the employer's exhibits.
Yes, sir.
Relating to some of these other terminations. It seems that there's never any suggestion, if I read them correctly, that the person was misusing all of a shift, or all of a leave request. Each one seems to say you were observed doing something inconsistent with the leave.
That's correct.
And that's it.
That's correct. And that's the consistency.
You were observed working as a dealer at the Sands. While on medical leave, you were working as a massage therapist. Understand that you are presently on medical leave for your own health brought to my attention that you were observed doing manual labor. On leave for your wife's serious health conditions brought to my attention that you were observed operating the inn. Simple as that.
Yes, sir. If they misuse the leave, they were discharged.
Those sound like, I must say, res ipsa loquitur with respect to fraud. That is, the person who is actually working at another casino.
And
how much more do you need to say that you're defrauding me than saying we're paying you to work at another casino?
Well, with regard to anyone, arguably then, Judge Garland, who misuses the lead, you know, why do we assume, with all due respect to Mr. Justiniano, that he didn't intentionally misuse this? The board doesn't have any evidence that it was not intentional. He says, in fact, in his testimony, that he elected to stay at the rally and then he left. Why did he not leave the rally, you know, at 11:30? He intentionally chose to stay there. So if we want to look at intent, we can certainly go and look at the actions and his choice on how he utilized that time.
Looking at the dealer's case, there's no information one way or the other as to whether the leave was paid, just medical leave.
I'm sorry, Judge Ginsburg.
We don't know whether, Judge Garland mentioned fraud, but we don't know whether the person was on paid leave or unpaid leave.
On the particular dealer, no. That's correct.
It says you were on late medical leave.
Yes, sir.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, we have taken you far beyond your rebuttal time as well.
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, counsel. We'll call the next case.